Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointsTC.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
I welcome Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, publishing most recently about Europe and its relationship to the Ukrainian war, the wider consequences of the Russian-Ukraine war as it winds down, as it leans towards a resolution of some kind. One place to start about an unintended consequence is Turkey. Turkey right now is ripped by protests, political protests, against a very strong, very willful, almost driven President Erdogan. Erdogan is also engaged in Syria, a darkness visible, and is opposite Russia, often he is the Black Sea Basin, and controls what you'd have to say is a vision, a dream that many in the Middle East have, called Neo-Ottomanism. What is that? Recreation of the Ottoman Empire that existed right up until the First War and then broke into pieces. Iraq, Afghanistan, Persia, Jordan, Syria, Lebanon, Israel, all the way down to Africa, Saudi Arabia, the Ottoman Empire of 5 centuries ago. But Erdogan sees himself as the master of all this terrain. Unintended consequence? Question mark. Gregory, did anyone see that Turkey would make this move before the Ukrainian war, before NATO and the EU became obsessed with Kyiv while Ankara advanced? Was this predicted or is it an accident of history? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, you and I talked about it over the years, obviously, because I was concerned with the rise of Erdogan as a neo-dictator. In fact, his staff call him my sultan. So he's really got the Ottoman bug firmly in his place. But the reality is that Erdogan takes advantage of every situation that he can. He took advantage of the Russia-Ukraine war to play his participation in NATO against his participation in Central Asian and Russian-dominated organizations. So he's always one for playing one side off against the other. He's always given the European Union a lot of pressure so that they will give him concessions. He's flooded Europe with illegal migrants and the like so that the Europeans would then pay him to hold them back and all this sort of stuff. Now, however, he's in a fairly strong position because the collapse of the Assad Baathist government in Syria allowed Turkey to literally control and dominate the new Syrian government, which is comprised of jihadist leaders who were being paid for by the Turkish government and often by the US for that matter. But the reality is that Turkey now controls much of Syria. It's a difficult situation to control, but they do it. And that means that they have a strategic and military presence in Turkey, right on the borders of Israel. And that's one aspect. They also have ambitions against Iran, Persia, which of course was never part of the Ottoman Empire, was the great competitor of the Ottoman Empire. And they have their ambitions in the Balkans. So literally, Turkey is in the middle of all of the Eurasian and Eastern Mediterranean and Middle Eastern areas of interest. It has strong interests in Libya, which is trying to break away to form a new government there. It has strong interests in Somalia, in Ethiopia. It's attempted to regain its interests in Egypt, which without much success. So it's going to be and is a problem for the rest of Europe. But all of the countries in the region, whether it's Ukraine or whether it's the European Union, have grave difficulties at this stage in understanding what it is they can do for their own security and economic well-being, and where they are, if you like, under siege from the Americans, the United States, or indeed from under siege from the Russians and the Chinese, the People's Republic of China. So you've got a situation where the key bodies which have been the glue holding this overarching region together, the European Union, NATO, and the like, they're actually falling apart, as is the United Nations. So we're at this particular point in time where everything is changing, where Turkey is very fragile. It's economically a disaster zone, and yet Erdogan is playing on his nationalist and Ottomanist jingoism to keep the crowds from breaking down the doors of his palace. But the reality is that he's in a situation where he's got a coin he's tossing up saying, heads we go global, tails we liquidate. And he's in a very touch-and-go situation. Europe itself is in a touch-and-go situation in many respects, as well as the European Union literally fails to be able to hold itself together, either economically or politically. NATO is being undermined by its lack of mission at the end of the Cold War and by the fact that the new Trump administration has said, well, what are you guys there for? What are you doing? How are you helping us? Why do you want us to help you? And what do you expect of us? All of these sorts of things. So as we see the Russia-Ukraine war come to an end, and it will somehow peter out this year, we're going to then start to see what are these wreckages of countries that we see after that war, and how do we start to rebuild from there? And it's going to be a very, very different world, and it's going to take a lot of new and creative thinking to restructure Europe, restructure the U.S. position in the region. And I think what the U.S. is doing is basically moving east of NATO. It's positioning itself in the Eastern Mediterranean with Israel. It's going to take a strong position in Eastern Europe. We might even see, as the EU and as NATO breaks up, Central Asian countries like Hungary and Austria and others take a different position to the Western European countries. All of these things are now possible. And Russia is emerging from this fairly strongly. It's got a very low debt to GDP ratio. So despite the fact that people are saying that Russia is in very bad shape, it's actually economically far more stable than most of Europe, and even for that matter in a debt terms to North America.
You note that Central Europe, Austria, Czechia, Hungary, Poland, and Slovakia are looking to form a significant part of the next phase, whatever Europe comes to. These are individual nationalist countries, and nationalism is glued. Does it still work, that nationalism in Central Europe? They've been beaten up for more than a century.
That's all they've got left, frankly. They found that when they joined the European Union as a mechanism to escape the old Soviet domination of Eastern Europe, the Western Europeans basically disregarded them, disregarded their warnings about recreating the Soviet Union. You might recall the Czech former prime minister and former president, Václav Havel, basically said, we didn't leave the Soviet Union to join another one. And that's basically the way they feel. And I think what we're going to see are a lot of those former Soviet states, if you like, joining together with a lot of other peripheral EU states, including the Scandinavian states and also some of the Baltic states, to form literally a north-south corridor from the Mediterranean up to the Arctic. Now, whether that will be a buffer zone between Western Europe and Russia is debatable. Whether it'll be it'll facilitate greater cross-border trade, it's possible, probable actually, but we'll start to see a reshaping of things along lines which are not the post-World War II lines envisaged by and sustained by the United States. Now, that may be to the detriment of the U.S., it may be to the detriment of the European states, But that's what's happening. We'll start to see countries like Germany going back to a reliance on Russian energy sources, for example. So there are all these sorts of things starting to happen. And the US will be in that region going through the Mediterranean, focusing on the Eastern Mediterranean, focusing on somehow building up a relationship in Iran, clerically run Iran, bringing Iran back into the fold as it was during the era of the Shah until early 1979. So everything, not just in that region, the transatlantic and Eurasian region, everything in the world is up for grabs at this moment.
Russia, the U.S. and Russia, they tried rapprochement in the 20th century. It didn't last. Will they try it again, and will it last?
Well, they will try it again, and in fact, what's happening now is that the U.S. is trying to pry Russia away from its alliance or its alliance of expedience with the People's Republic of China, just as Nixon did in 1972 when he was able to prize the PRC away from the Soviet Union. Now, Nixon's plan was to divide the Soviet China and Chinese Sino-Soviet Pact, get China, which is then the weaker part of the Sino-Soviet Pact, separated out, buy them off, calm them down, and then get rid of Chinese communism. Unfortunately, Nixon was deposed before he got to phase two of that, and so we saw Jimmy Carter and others and the Clintons coming along treating China as though it were a good friend and neighbor, and bolstered Chinese communism. It was unfortunate for the U.S. strategically that they did that. But now we see the Trump administration will have to pry Moscow away from Beijing. In other words, doing, if you like, the reverse of what Nixon did, and try to keep Russia as a stable partner. I think de Tocqueville basically said that, you know, Russia and the United States were destined to be great rivals, which may be the case, but they also have a stabilizing role which they can have on Europe as a whole. And bearing in mind that post-Soviet Russia is very much a nationalistic environment. It's not a communist globalist power. It's a nationalistic power which is paranoid about its own borders, not about necessarily expanding. I don't think it's looking to expand into NATO territory, but NATO is looking to expand into Russian areas of influence. So we've got, again, the reverse paranoia there. So Russia, I think, is going to come out of this fairly strongly. I think Ukraine will come out of it fairly strongly once Zelensky is removed from the picture, because he needs to get out and save face in such a way that he doesn't basically get arrested or killed by his own people. And that's what he's looking for now. He's prolonging the war as much as possible, simply until he can find a way out of this. But when he does find a way out of it, or if a way out is found, we may have soft borders then between Russia and Ukraine, with Russia still controlling the Donbass region and down to the Crimea and the like. But the rump of Western Ukraine resuming its role as a significant agricultural and mineral power, and possibly, again, as an industrial power. And it'll be just back to, if you like, pre-Khrushchev days when the Donbass was not included in the Ukrainian borders.
Let's head to two elections, Canada and Australia. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher, Defense and Foreign Affairs. I'm John Batchelor.